I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Happy Monday, everyone. Welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. My name's Amit Mann. You can find me on Twitter at @Amit_Mann. You can find my guest, Manny Rao, at... Where would they find you? Let me know.
They would find me at... So on Twitter, it's @_MannyRao. Instagram, it's @MannyRao, and then, you know, just Manny Rao, you can search me. Story about Twitter. I tried getting the Twitter handle @MannyRao, but some guy who hasn't used Twitter since 2010 has that, and I can't get it, and I don't know when I'll be able to get it or if I'll be able to get it, but I mean, that is the plan, that is the goal someday, to get that handle. So for right now though, it's @_MannyRao though.
You call the streets, call Twitter, let them know. It's like, what is this? Give me my name. This man's putting, disrespect on my name right now by not tweeting for so many years. You can find Manny doing work on Raps Republic, Yahoo Sports Canada. He is your betting expert. So if you want to make some money, you can rely on Manny for that. I'm a little bit of TSN action. So he's been around. He's doing lots of good stuff. So I'm happy to have you on, man. We're going to talk a little Kyle Lowry, I guess, on the game, general thoughts before we get into these specifics, which will be looking at some of the best moments from last night.
Yeah, I mean, I think just generally speaking, the game was, I think, a really hard-fought game. Obviously, the final, like, few seconds there, it was just absolutely chaotic. But I think, generally speaking, the Raptors, you know, it's easy to forget that they're a team that's coming off of kind of a retooling offseason where, you know, they obviously traded the guy that was honored last night and then began a new chapter in their franchise history. So, you know, even though they lost last night, this team has already, I would say, done way better than most people have expected. So, general thoughts, I would say, you know, it was a good game, hard fought game, obviously didn't come away with the W, but nonetheless, it was a really good game to watch, and I enjoyed it.
I mean, we all say like, oh, it was so cool to have Kyle back and that's what matters really. But I mean, come on, like, came away with an L. It was painful. That would have made the night actually perfect is if the Raptors ended up getting the win. But unfortunately, they did not because, I mean, the Miami Heat, that's why they have that championship pedigree. Kyle Lowry was terrific. He came into the game saying, oh, Nick's gonna not going to let me do anything. Well, you had 16 and 10 on 4 of 8 shooting. You hit some free throws and you were everywhere. So, yeah, not bad. I guess you're one of the outliers of other players who come back to Toronto and actually don't perform well. You actually did perform quite well. So kudos to you, sir. That's why you are special. Manny, let's go through some of our best moments. Our plan is to do like 7 best moments for Kyle Lowry, but I mean, I feel like it's going to end up being more, but hey, whatever. You can go first. Number one, sure. What was your moment that stuck out?
The moment that stuck out to me, I think it was pretty, and I just told you this before, and I think mine's going to differ from everybody else's, and I think everyone's going to look at me like, what are you thinking? But it was after the pregame, it was after the video package and everything, and it was the Raptors, when they introduced their own lineups, they played No Friends in the Industry, and, you know, by Drake off of Certified Lover Boy, and, you know, I don't know if they do that every game, but I thought it was just so symbolic and so funny because, you know, here we are honoring the greatest Raptor of all time. And then the next shot is this song that's like, yeah, we have no friends. Like, you know, we go from, yeah, we love you and welcome back to, but we still want to kill you on the court. You know what I mean? And so that to me was so symbolic of everything that the Toronto Raptors are right now. That should tell you everything about the culture of the franchise. And, you know, what Fred and Pascal and Scotty and OG and Gary Trent, Nick Nurse, Mazai Bobby, you know, everybody is about. And it's just, it was so funny to me because, like I said, on one hand, you're honoring this guy who's, you know, done so much for the franchise, spent 9 meaningful years here. You know, he got there when he was 26, left when he was like well, last season, so 34, I think. But nonetheless, I thought that was a really, really cool moment, just because I could take pride in that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man, that's a funny one. It's a funny thing that how that kind of worked out. With Kyle, I mean, during their intro, I was looking at the Miami Heat broadcast because they actually had just an ISO cam on Kyle during the Raptors introductions. And he was just like looking at them. And that might've been one of the reasons why that happened is that they were playing that song. He's like, huh, that's interesting. I haven't gone to a game yet this year because of like COVID and stuff like that. So I've been very, very careful, but so I don't actually know if that is their intro song. I don't know. Maybe probably people who are going to watch this video be like, what are you talking about? Of course, it's been like that all year, but it's like their identity and how they are. This is what it is. This is who they are, is that they have no friends in the industry and that.
Absolutely. Even winning. Kyle Lowry.
It is about who they are and their identity. They play a hard-nosed brand of basketball. It's about the Toronto Raptors and not the other team. And if they lose, it's because the Raptors didn't do something wrong or didn't do something right. That's why, right? It's not that the other team beat them. The Raptors lost. It's like their vision. It's their winning mentality. And that's one of the things that actually Kyle Lowry was a big part of building, is that it's about accountability and who we are and how we play. And the other team, like, there's the other team. If we do our job, we're probably going to win the game. That's a funny one.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I enjoyed seeing that he just actually had a good game. And I talked about it earlier on today, but in this podcast, is that he came in and he missed his first few shots. And I mean, that's okay. First few open threes were missed and that's no biggie, but then he really did settle down. And the fact that the Raptors know that he is just a pick and roll savant and they still couldn't stop it, it pretty much tells you what Kyle Lowry is. Like, he is a perfectionist when it comes to that pick and roll game. Him and Bam Adebayo have this like incredible chemistry, and he's just always three steps ahead. Even though teams are watching all kinds of film on that pick and roll, it doesn't matter because he's still three, four steps ahead. And I mean, he had 10 assists for a reason. He was early on in the game. He was using that pick and roll to make shots for himself, for Bam. He was navigating through it and finding open shooters. I mean, we know about the shooters at the Miami Heat have. They were ridiculous last night. It was stupid how many shots they made. Granted, a lot of them were open, and that's kind of part of the Raptors' flawed defense and some guys not really focusing on the coverages and doing their job properly. We'll get to that in a second, but in the end, it was just cool seeing that he came back. He had a great game, and he's not going to impact the game the same way that like a Kawhi or DeMar come when they came back. Like, both those guys, I mean, Kawhi had a decent game. DeMar didn't have a great game. You guys remember that moment where, you know, Kawhi stole the ball, Kyle and Kawhi stole the ball from him.
Yeah.
Raptors win. But I mean, Kyle's just like, he's not the kind of player. He's a point guard. He's a pass first player. You got to like pull his arm to actually take a shot these days because he just won't do it. But I think we'll probably see that change a little bit in the playoffs. I think we're going to see a much more aggressive Kyle Lowry. But anyways, he's more about focusing on getting good shots for his team and making sure that their offense is flowing well. But had a couple of nice shots last night. Definitely abused Ken Birch a little bit in the pick and roll.
Oh, man.
It is what it is. Not just Ken Birch, everyone, but yeah.
That's the thing with Kyle, is that he's so crafty when it comes to the pick and roll. And when you give him somebody like Bam Adebayo, who is just so good on the inside. I mean, if he gets a mid-range, then it really unlocks his game and takes it to another level. But, you know, still, Bam Adebayo is a big, brute guy. And, you know, that definitely played a huge part in, you know, the circles that Kyle ran around Ken Birch last night. It's ridiculous.
He even got Pascal on his back a few times. And that, again, the pick and roll where, like, Kyle just, like, puts his big caboose on you and he's he creates that space and the little small two on one around the rim. He was great, man. He had a terrific game. I wanted that game
And it was a 5-point game. It ended up being a 5-point game. Couldn't have been closer. I think the Raptors were actually favored by 5 points.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I guess Miami ended up covering, and that's who I thought was going to, I thought Miami was going to cover. I thought Toronto was going to win, but ultimately, you know, I mean, now they split the season series, Miami and Toronto. So, you know, but you know, nothing beats that triple overtime thriller that they had, I think back in February or March, March.
Wild. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. But yeah, let's get back to getting back to last night. I mean, honestly, I think that Kyle probably had one of his better games this season. And I think that being in Toronto and, you know, definitely added to it. I felt like there was some sort of flair, obviously, because, you know, he's still going one-on-one with the guy he took under his wing, Fred VanVleet. So, I mean, that definitely, I think, played a part in it. That gave him a little bit of extra juice. You know what I mean?
And Freddie had that too. He talked about it after the game.
Oh, Freddie had that too. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, I came out and he wanted to show his best because he felt like Kyle deserved that, is essentially what he said. And he was a few threes away from breaking that 3-point record. And we're like, oh, is he going to do it against Kyle? That'd be kind of cool. Did in the first quarter. He had 17.
He did in the first. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He also hit a pull up transition three, as we know, Kyle Lowry. He loves those ones.
Absolutely.
That's his jam. And he was pretty much doing what Kyle Lowry would do. He'd come out strong, lead the team. Before the game, they're in the huddle. And if you could read lips, I was able to kind of make it out.
Oh, he's like,
let's go get this effing win.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we didn't. But he came out very focused, right? And you can kind of see how that the influence of Kyle really does show in every part of his game. Even like pregame, Kyle was talking about how Fred learned so much about his footwork around the 3-point line and how to navigate angles and how to get your feet placed properly. So that way you can get your shot up quickly, because when Fred entered the NBA and the first few years too, like his shot was, he has a pretty slow release, but he sped it up so well through his footwork. But like when it comes to like actually getting the ball from, you know, point A to point B and shooting, it is kind of slow, but his footwork is like ridiculous. It's like next level. And a lot of that probably is attributed to what he's learned from Kyle Lowry. But it was another cool moment. Was like in the second quarter, Kyle was contesting a Fred shot, and he came, went straight up, arms up like this, and Fred finished over him. And there was a big smile on his face. Little things like that, man. It was cool seeing how those two kind of fed off of each other. It's been alluded to that they never really practiced against each other, because if they did, it would just get a little bit too heated. A little bit too much. So Nick always kept them on the same team. As Fred, a shooting guard, of course. So yeah, seeing those two kind of go back and forth. It was, again, very weird. Like first second of the game, ball is dropped. I'm looking at it. You got Fred on this side, Kyle on this side. I'm like, this does not look right. This is very strange.
It is. And there was one point in the first quarter too, where Fred picked Kyle up about three quarters of the court, like, and started, you know, and it was very, you know, it was, I think, right after Fred hit a three, and coming back, he picked Kyle up and almost picked the ball off of him, but it went out of bounds. But it was just, it was really interesting to see that. And I agree with you. For a second, I had to kind of blink twice to kind of get that, you know, that sight, get used to it. You know what I mean? Because it's still weird seeing Lowry in a Miami Heat jersey and then Fred VanVleet going one-on-one with him. But you know what though? It is really cool to see that, because it is the passing of the torch in a lot of ways, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the one thing I took out of this more than anything is I was thinking to myself about this last night, like, yeah, we're calling Kyle Lowry the greatest Raptor of all time right now. What about in like 10 years when somebody else possibly pops into the conversation, and now there's
Scotty
a debate
Burns.
Over
Scotty Burns.
Over
Scotty Burns.
Right? There's going to be a debate over who the greatest Raptor of all time is, and that to me is going to be probably the coolest moment. And that was something that I think is really telling of how far the Raptors have come, not just in Toronto, not even just in Canada, but in the league. When you have to have a debate over who the greatest player is in franchise history, I mean, that's, you know, people debate about who the greatest player of all time is right now between LeBron and Michael all the time. And cool, we'll leave that for a separate day. But to have that for the Raptors, I mean, you know, nobody would ever think that maybe 10 years ago. Even 10 years ago, nobody would think that. So
championship changed it all, man.
Absolutely.
Different times, right? It was Vince Carter and then pretty much everyone else. Although I will say that Damon Stoudamire does not get enough credit for his time with the Toronto Raptors, how good he was. He was like a player who's averaging 24 and 10 in his rookie season. That is special.
Was it 24 and 10?
It was something like that. Yeah, it was like 24 and 10. And that's why he won Rookie of the Year. He was ridiculous. Granted, I mean, how he progressed in the rest of his career, I mean, that might have been one of the peaks, right? But still, 24 and 10 in his first season as an NBA player on an expansion franchise when he was the focal point, Muddy Mouse was legit. Anyways, back to Kyle Lowry, your next moments.
So I would say like the next coolest moment, in my opinion, I would say is probably when Fred actually passed him. It was about, I have my notes here. It was about, it was 5:30-ish left to go in the first.
Yeah.
And it was Fred passing Kyle to become the, you know, Raptors all-time three-point field goals made leader. And that was just so cool because you saw them after too.
3-point field goals in a season.
Season. Yeah. And so that was really cool. And especially for it to happen, you know, last night against Kyle. And I think in pregame too, Kyle was talking about, it might've been pregame or postgame. Oh no, it was pregame. Because Kyle was talking about how he was hoping he'd been paying attention to Fred creeping up on his number. And he was saying, you know, I don't know if he's going to get it tonight. I hope he gets it tonight. And you know, whatever, or he said something funny along the lines of, you know, I don't want him to get it against me or something, but, it was so, so poetic too, because it was, you know, you finally have Kyle and Fred going up against each other in an official NBA game. And, you know, in a lot of ways it's like, yeah, the past meets the present. Mm-hmm. There's just so many different angles you could like look at that and analyze it from. But for me, it was just as simple as, you know, a student passing the teacher for that particular record.
Yeah, that was a cool one, man. And we're going to see where Fred VanVleet ends up this season, because it's been cool seeing him look a little bit healthier over these last few games. We know where he was a few weeks ago. It looked like he could barely walk. Gosh,
absolutely.
That was very depressing. But
that's scary.
Yeah, but he's kind of finding his stride now, and maybe Alex McKechnie, man, he's a magician. Maybe he's doing good stuff over there. Other things that came to mind, I mean, it's probably kind of obvious, but the ovation and like the video tribute. I love seeing like Kyle. He was so focused on making sure that his kids were right beside him. And there was like a good like 15-second chunk where he's like, come here. And they just, I mean, they're kids. They're probably just like, you want to just walk across the court? He's like, yes, I want you to walk across the court, because he wanted his kids beside him for that moment. And if you guys know Kyle's story, he is a player who didn't have much of a fatherly influence. And he's been the exact opposite for his kids. He wants them to share every moment he has. He wants to be every part of their lives as much as possible. And, just seeing like that little moment, and like, you know, that little moment in the video too, where in the bubble, his kids were doing the intros. Well, I mean, all the kids were doing the intros for all the Raptors players. And there were only a few moments where Kyle actually smiled during the tribute video, and that was one of them. And it was just cool seeing like him kind of take those steps. And as a man too, right? The other thing that I wanted to talk about too was like after the game, there's like this really cool photo of Masai and Kyle sharing a moment, and you just think of like their turbulent relationship, and you want to talk like player growth, growth as a person, growth as a man. There it is. Like, they were not on good terms. Dwayne Casey and Kyle, not on good terms. You think of Kyle earlier on in his career, like he was a prickly guy that a lot of people probably didn't like, teammates, coaches, yada yada, go down the list. But now you think of like a Giannis, an Embiid, CP3, Jimmy Butler. These are star players. Some of the greatest players in the NBA at the moment, and they're all just speaking how great a person that Kyle Lowry is. And these are things that have happened over the past few years, but they're acknowledging that part of his game and the person that Kyle is. And he wasn't always like that. And that's where we talk about, you know, how he's grown as a person. And he says, I've become a man in Toronto. That's what he's talking about. Right. He had his ideologies, his stubbornness, and that, granted, that is still there. But as a person, as a teammate, you will not question how good of a person he is. And I'm sure there are people who would disagree with that. Ben Simmons, Aaron Gordon. But that's OK. Yeah. That's their problems. You poked the bear, and so you got the horn. Yeah. That's all it was. But Kyle Lowry, he's really etched his legacy in the NBA as one of the most likable people during his time. And you think about what really is valued when you look back at your career, your life, when you're 70, 80 years old or whatever, and they're going to be viewing him as, you know, that guy who was just a good person who cared about people. And I got that feeling from that ovation. It was different from DeMar's, because DeMar's was like, I mean, there was a mutual like admiration, a respect, a love as well. But like Kyle's was like, he was beloved during that.
Feel it.
Like, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about the crowd cheering and his reactions. He said he wasn't going to cry, and he did not cry. So kudos to that, because he didn't want to get made fun of by his teammates. But how many players have gotten an ovation like that? I mean, CP3, when he went back to the Hornets franchise, Clippers, DeMar, of course, Paul Pierce. We hate
probably LeBron well. Going back to Cleveland, I think. When
the
they,
second
you know,
time around. The second,
the
time,
second
around.
Time around, yeah. Because yes, then, right? You know, they saw it was bigger than basketball on the exactly. on the Jumbotron, right? Right? So, I mean, no, to your point, absolutely. I think there's no – I can't think of a reception that was warmer than what Kyle got last night. And I think it was completely deserved. And then nobody's going to dispute that. And if anybody does, it's clear lunacy on their part. In terms of when he – you know, him and Mazai's relationship, it's funny that you mentioned that because I remember – at a point in the championship season, obviously before they won, Kyle was doing a sit down with Rachel Nichols and she asked him, you know, what's your relationship like with Masai Ujiri? And he's like, you know, he's the president. And, you know, you can kind of just get the understanding, like Kyle still had a little bit of sour grapes over the DeMar thing and totally understandable because, you know, they're like their family, you know, they're boys, they're brothers through and through. Then you fast forward to the moment where they win the championship in San Francisco. And Kyle is, you know, Masai has that incident where the police officer, you know, whatever happened. And Kyle is like, you know, don't worry about him. Don't worry. F him. Like, come on the court. And Kyle's pulling Masai and Kyle's bringing Masai. And Kyle's like, you know, warming, like trying to embrace Masai. And he's just kind of like trying to comfort him. You know what I mean? He's like, this is all you. This is like, you know, he's just trying to have a moment with him. And, and you know, it was just so interesting to like note that those two things, like those, you know, that sit down with Nichols and then that incident, you know, when they eventually won, that happened in the same season. So it goes to show like, even in that season, like maybe Kyle, like, you know, went from being that player that you were talking about to now he's like this grown mature man, this professional that, you know, nobody in Toronto can say a bad word about because that's the kind of person he is. And, you know, Masai definitely showed him that loyalty as well. And, you know, I think that speaks volumes to not even just how much the organization loves him, loves Kyle, but just also how much he is respected and revered here. You know what I mean?
It's special, man. It's a special relationship. It's been said like nonstop over the past few days. Like it's just different with Kyle. And when a statue does come up, someone put a statue up of Kyle outside the Sportsbank Arena. That was pretty funny. But yeah, it's just a different kind of relationship. And I mentioned like the times that I saw Kyle actually smile during the video tribute. The other time was when Masai said during some sort of press conference, he's like, Kyle Lowry is the greatest Raptor of all time. That's the other time that he smiled. Their relationship is it's so cool. And it was talked about in that Players Tribune piece that Kyle did before he came to Toronto, and where he said like this conversation between you and I, Masai and Kyle is BS. This is after the trade finally happened to the Miami Heat, because he's saying like, this means nothing. This doesn't change anything. Like I'm going to be part of your life forever. So me doing this like official, like, oh, well, thank you for your service. Like, it doesn't matter. It's stupid because you and I, like we are, this is much bigger than basketball, little brother, big brother. That's what it is. So let's just like squash this and let's move on. And I'll probably see you in a few days. Like,
talk to you tomorrow.
Another one for you, sir.
So I was thinking also, I mean, I think overall, just, you know, when they were like matching up, like, you know, Fred, I think Kyle going over to, you know, talk to all of them and just saying like, hey, what's going on? You know, you could see that there was like some sort of, there was a lot of love between them, but then you could also see that they were trying not to get too caught up in the love fest, I guess you could say, because, you know, they were just also focused on the game. So for me, I think that was something that definitely stuck out to it. It contributes to it, you know, kind of the no friends in the industry thing that I was saying earlier. Yeah. But I think ultimately like that has to be something that definitely accounted for, like, you know, seeing the guys that are there and happy to see him, you know, and he did mention, you know, after the game, Kyle did say like, you know, Scottie's an amazing talent. He's going to be an amazing player. Oh, yeah. So I think that was really cool to see. And I saw something on Twitter too. And it was, somebody said something like, you know, imagine how good Scottie could be if Kyle was still here. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't necessarily think that way, but I think it would have been a very cool dynamic to see Scottie learn from Kyle. With that being said, I think that ultimately, you know, the reception between the players and just the exchanges between the players it was really cool to see them before the game. And, you know, it was just like, you know, but Big Brother still got the W, and that's, you know, that's something that, that does sting a little bit. We'll get him. We'll get him next year then.
But who knows, man, maybe in the playoffs, you know, you don't know.
That's what I'm thinking. Absolutely. So, I mean, I think that the exchange between the players was also very cool because, you know, you have the cordial relationships, but at the same time, you know, they go back to like, I want to kill you. I want to kill you on the court.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that we love you. We still want to beat you. You know what I mean? You know,
on that Heat broadcast, when the Raptors were doing their intros and their, you know, that song was playing, they had an isolation camera on Kyle, and you can kind of, I feel like you could see him kind of enter game mode where he was asleep. It's time to lock in. And they had a camera on him for like 25, 30 seconds. And, you know, a few of his teammates, Bam comes up, head coaches come up, or coaches come up, Jimmy Butler comes up, they're all dapping him up saying, you know, congrats, like that was cool and everything like that. But then he just like kind of like does like a switch almost where it's like, it's time to win now. And right before the whistle blew, like you would think that there was maybe something between like Fred and Kyle and Pascal on the court. There was nothing because they're like, you're on this side, I'm on this side. It's time to get a win. That culture, man, it's what it is that this is game time and it's time to start winning games. And unfortunately, the Raptors did not win the game. It was very annoying. But anyways, sticking to the subject, I did really enjoy post game too. And again, I'm alluding to like the Heat broadcast because they had like there were a few photos on Getty that I saw after the game of Kyle, like, you know, being with fans and shaking hands and stuff like that. And you look on that broadcast and on it, he said that you guys just witnessed, you know, some of the greatest fans in the world. And then afterwards, like there's people yelling behind him. He goes, shakes hands. And it's like a 68 second clip that I found. And that's the first thing he did. He like, he greets fans. He signs some autographs. He's on the court. He blows some kisses. He takes it all in for a second. That's when I think actually he was about to cry because he wasn't going to do a pregame because he was so focused on it. But like, it felt like he was releasing at that moment and he was looking around and the game's over. There's less emotions at that moment. You're just kind of looking and taking it all in. And that's when I thought he was about to shed a tear, but he did not, which is okay.
He didn't. And then, I thought he was about to during the video package. There was a point at, when he was at center court, actually, that I thought he was about to as well. But to your point, he didn't. He didn't crack at all.
No, I think I got close though. And then after post game, like he had two game balls. He gave one to the Raptors PR person, and then he took the other one. And that's after that point, that's when we got that legendary photo, which I'm going to put in the YouTube video if you guys want to watch that as well. I'll put it around here because that was really special too. Man. Very, very cool. I wish, I hope, you know, good things happen for him for sure this season. I just hope that it doesn't happen against the Toronto Raptors. Absolutely. Is that so bad?
Not at all, man. There's another point in the game that I thought this was really encouraging and for the Raptors. And it was like more encouraging for like the future more than anything. And maybe even as soon as the playoffs, but it didn't necessarily pertain to Kyle. It was more so about Scotty. Yeah. And, you know, everyone's already on that train. And I know it's been said a million times, but, you know, Scotty, I think one possession he went from guarding Bam to guarding Lowry or Hero. And I was like, you know, there's not very many players in the league that can make that defensive adjustment. You know what I mean? And it just goes to show like that Scotty is a lot of everything. And although he still has, you know, things he needs to develop, This is a player that without a doubt is going to be such an important part of the Raptors' future. You know what I mean? And as soon as the playoffs too. So that to me was like really interesting. Did you pick up on that or did you see that?
I didn't actually. I mean, it feels like it's kind of just part of the course, right? With Scotty is that he guards everyone and Pascal guards everyone.
Yeah.
A moment that did stick out to me though, it's kind of in the similar vein, is that I saw Fred, he subbed in for Precious Achiuwa. And I'm just like, these things are so weird. I think it was like in the second half at some point. And I'm like, this Raptors team, man, because they had like Thad Young on the court and Pascal and I'm sure Scotty. And so that's like a switch that you probably see, but usually it's like, you know, small forward for small forward, shooting guard for shooting guard, point guard for point guard, center for center. But this was Precious Achiuwa coming in or going out and Fred VanVleet coming in. I'm like, man, this team is so wacky. Yeah. I love it.
To your point, you mentioned Thad Young and there was another moment that they stuck out to me that I think is also going to help, like, you know, the Raptors. And it's really, it shows why, like, Thad Young is probably the best veteran presence you can.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Bring into a locker room. And, you know, it wasn't it was more of his play. So I guess it doesn't have much to do with his mentality, but he was right beneath the basket, but I think Bam was on him or somebody was on him. And he did an overhead pass to the corner behind him. And it was to either Gary Trent or it was to Boucher, and they nailed a three. But I mean, that's like something, you know, you don't see very many Raptors doing. Pascal, of course, he drives and kicks out. Scotty, obviously, he can, you know, make the passes and he does those one hand passes. But I mean, you know, to have a presence like that young down low, who isn't necessarily the most offensively threatening player anymore, like, you know, the way he used to be. Well, he wasn't really that great, but anyway. It was just really like, wow, okay, that's gonna come in handy in the playoffs if you know the Raptors need to kick it out, and you know, if somebody's in the corner, you know what I mean. It was just really like cool to see that, because it opens up so many different possibilities for Toronto on that end. So that's what I thought was really interesting, is Stad's behind the back pass or over the head pass.
Yeah, once again, lack of three-point shooting reared its ugly head. The Raptors shot 30% from three, and usually when they don't shoot from three very well, they lose the game. And here we are. Scottie Barnes was 3 of 9. I mean, a lot of those shots were wide open, and Miami had a game plan. We're like, we're going to make sure that, you know, the person that's guarding Scottie is going to be, you know, hanging around the paint, clogging it up, and we're going to see if Scottie Barnes can hit a lot of threes, wide open threes. And one of them was a little bit contested, but for the most part, those were wide open shots. And this is like the degree of difficulty of the shots is important. Like, you know, Gary Trent Jr. going 3 of 8 from three is different from Scottie Barnes going 3 of 9, just because of the kind of shots that you're getting. If if Gary Trent's getting the same shots that Scottie's getting, he's probably going to go for like 6 of 9 or something like that. Again, this is all the maturation, like OG missing. We've seen it nonstop. When he's out, it is a problem. Or when Gary Trent Jr. is out, like their starting lineup is very important to them because of that 3-point shooting. And because they're missing OG, that allowed them to clog the paint, and the Raptors had to hit threes, and unfortunately they did not. And so, yeah, that's kind of the story that happened there. It really came down to that. And obviously the defensive end, Tyler Hero, carved them up in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Damn. And he was one of those players that people were just like, oh, do we want him back in a Kyle Lowry sign and trade? Prestachua? No, we don't want Tyler Hero. Like, no, we want Tyler Hero. Granted, he doesn't really fit the mold of what the Raptors are, you know, their ideology and their methodology, and, you know, 6'9" across the board, yada, yada, yada. But man, he was dishing in that fourth quarter. He had 6 assists. Mm-hmm. He was blowing by people. He blew by Pascal a couple of times. He blew by Precious Achiuwa. He blew by Gary Trent Jr. And he was creating wide open threes for players like Max Strauss, who, guess what, went 7 of 9 from three. He was pretty impressive. And, you know, the Raptors, I think there was a bit of this was like, you know, a blown defensive coverages. I think Nick kind of talked about it after the game too. And I think they did want to double the ball and those pick and roll situations, and they just were very slow at it. And if you're slow with your set, with your doubles along the perimeter, guess what? You're just creating like all kinds of passing avenues, left, right, center, east, west, yada, yada, yada. And so you're just asking a player to make those open passes, and Tyler did it. He did a great job with it. And I think that's probably the biggest takeaway from the Raptors losing this game. Granted, 3-point shooting was bad. And, you know, you hope that sometimes some players like Thad Young, Chris Boucher, players like that are going to hit their wide open threes. It's a big part of why the Raptors can lose or win a game when their starters or one of the starters aren't playing. But outside of that, like defensively, that was one of their probably their worst games in a little while.
Yeah.
Just because of that very fact that it looked like at times they didn't know what they were doing. And that were, those were some of the things that were so annoying earlier on the season. We're just like, what are they trying to do on offense or defense? And it turned out is because there was assorted players blowing coverages. And that's what happened.
Absolutely. And when you consider too, you know, Tyler Hero is very likely to win Sixth Man of the Year. I mean, maybe there's other candidates out there, but I think in my mind, he's the obvious choice. The other thing is Miami is also entering yesterday's contest. Miami was number one in the NBA in three-point shooting. I'm sure that's still accurate as of today. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, when you don't shoot the three well, and then when you also don't guard it very well, I mean, you're gonna in today's league, that's the sword you're gonna fall on. Ultimately, that's just what it came down to. And you know, when you talk about a guy like Tyler Hero, I mean, I was thinking if the Raptors are going to trade Lowry at the deadline last year, you know, to Miami, obviously Tyler Hero is the guy that, you know, we want back because, yeah, he doesn't fit the mold. But at the same time, he's somebody that fits the idea of what a commodity is in today's league. Sure, he's not a big brute on the inside, but he's a guy that can shoot it from deep and, you know, even shoot it from mid-range too. He's a threat. And so that's something that you need. He's almost like a Gary Trent Jr. He's in the same mold as Gary Trent Jr. with a little bit more, I think, juice on the offensive end.
Definitely.
And so, you know, while he may not be a defensive savant or like, you know, he may not have as fast hands as Gary does. And he's shown it that he does this year. I still think that Tyler Hero is so crucial to everything Miami does. And you saw it last night. I mean, you know, he comes off the bench and, you know, he provides them with, you know, this option, this first option automatically. And he can get hot. And when he's on that, and when he's, you know, when it's a heat check for him, it's like, he's just hitting everything and he can't miss. And, you know, whether he's blowing by defenders, whether he's getting open for a three, you know, you need to make sure that you're going over screens to follow him. You need to make sure that you're closing up. You can't give him any space to breathe.
Sure.
Like even you need to, like, he's the kind of shooter that you can't afford to let him get hot or else he's going to make you pay. And that's exactly what you saw yesterday. So, I mean, you know, the Raps, obviously the 3-point defending it, 3-point shot defending it, and obviously shooting it is a process, but it's developing, but you know, it come playoff time, it's going to be, hopefully it'll be easier to game plan against, but we'll see.
Yeah. Team shoots 47% from three over the course of a game. Probably not going to win that one. I keep forgetting that, you know, Tyler Hero is 6'5". Doesn't look like it on the court, but he's a tall dude and someone who can kind of move that fast, that agile, and who has that kind of footwork. Like, his step back is really hard to stop. And when he comes off those screens, man, like, he's kind of flying, it seems like, at times. And then he just he pulls right up into his shot. Like, you can't, how are you going to stop it? And this is what was so intriguing about him when he came into the NBA, is that this guy, like, it wasn't just like he was hitting lucky shots. He was hitting tough shots and he was doing it consistently. Last year was whatever. That's fine. But you can really see, like, how he's matured into his offense. I don't know how much better he can get. It's one of those weird things. Like, he's so good already. And I feel like he's kind of already reaching his peak for what his body type is. Make tweaks along the way. And that's cool. But anyways, like, his shot making, it's going to be an asset for Miami. They need it because Jimmy Butler, he has his limitations on the offensive end. He can't really hit threes very well. And that's why you need Tyler Hero, you know, down the stretch of games. You need him to be that secondary ball handler at times. You need him to be that third person outside of Kyle and Jimmy, who's on the court, who can kind of, like, you know, cut and, you know, roll off screens. And when they do a lot of, like, you know, double actions where it's like with Spain pick and rolls, yada, yada, yada. Like, they have a very movement heavy offense, and it's kind of cool. I love watching their offense. That's why, you know, movement shooters like Max Strauss and Tyler Hero are so valuable, is that they just need like a second and their footwork is so good. They can get their shot off so quickly. And, you know, another reason why, you know, Duncan Robinson isn't really playing a lot right now is that it's because Max Strauss has taken his minutes and he's
absolutely, jumps. Absolutely. Yeah. 7 of 9 last night. I mean, how can you take the guy off? 7 of 9? Like, that's ridiculous. That's a good game for a guy that I think I don't even know if he was drafted or not, if he went undrafted, but I know that he's a fairly new player to Miami. So, I mean, you know, especially when you consider those shooters and, you know, maybe those shooters, if the thing is like Miami has a really interesting, you know, roster of players, because they have these shooters that you could say are, you know, either like, you know, above average to like elite. But then you also have a big man in the middle who is just, he's really good on the interior. And he's also good at, you know, defending the paint. So I think that you have to figure out pick your poison at that point. You know what I mean? You have to figure out whether you want to close them out on the three, which as you just mentioned, their footwork is ridiculous. So it's going to be really hard to do that. Or if you want to, you know, sacrifice, you know, the three ball and let them take their chances with it and, you know, maybe defend Bam on the inside. It doesn't matter. You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. That's a situation where you just don't win. You know what I mean?
And you got to find ways to clock the paint against them. It's all you can really do. And you're going to have to give up something. And probably a lot of the cases in the playoffs is going to be that we're going to give Jimmy Butler his space around the 3-point line. We're going to see if he can hit those deep, deep twos or even
three-point shots.
And this is what it's going to come down to, bro.
Absolutely.
This is going to decide if they win a championship or not, or if they get to the finals and Bam out of bio, he's got to be able to hit those like little jimmies. That was a huge issue last season. And even in the bubble too, is that unless it's a dunk, is like, is he going to be able to finish or layup? Can he hit those shots? And, you know, to his credit, I think he's working on it. I think he's trying, but you're right. I mean, defensively, he's the closest thing probably to like peak Draymond Green that we have right now. And that's kind of what we want Scottie Barnes to end up being in some ways too, is like that person who's just everywhere in the paint, who's like guarding on the perimeter, who's, you know, helping around the rim, who's rushing at shooters. You want him to be everything. And that's what Scottie is hopefully going to become at some point. Tall mountain to climb. But I mean, that's his task. He'll work that out. Victor Oladipo is one thing I wanted to mention too, is because it's really cool to kind of find his stride again, man. He's had a rough couple of years here, and he had a shot at, who was it against? I think it was Precious Achiuwa. It was a step back three that he hit, and he like stopped on a dime, went around his back, and then did a step back. And I was like, man, that's like ISO Depot, the one that we remembered. And I hope he can kind of find his groove, because that's another player. We talk about the keys to the Miami championship. If he's able to come off the bench and be that spark plug, changes everything about them.
Oh, absolutely. They
become really hard to guard. Like really
hard. And the thing is, Depot isn't even, is he like, he's still not even that far removed from being, you know, the player, the all around player that he was in Indiana. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah, he's had a rough go, and, you know, he's been injured. And, but I mean, if he can even become like 60% of that from Miami, I mean, that's a scary deep team. Like Miami has depth. Like, honestly, it really does amaze me how deep this team is. You know what I mean? But you're right. If Depot can come off, and if he can, you know, be that guy that he was, like, you know, even a shell of it, then I mean, this is going to be a really hard team to beat. You know what I mean? And I still can't believe that they have him. And they have like Tyler Hero coming off the bench. It's like, how do you even construct the roster like that? But I mean, that's the luxury for them.
They got size too. We didn't even talk about this earlier on, but like they're missing three rotation players last night because they're on a back-to-back as well. They had just beat the Bulls in a really impressive fashion, and no Deadman, no Vincent, no Butler, different players who have different roles on the team, but they're all rotation pieces.
No Tucker either.
Yeah, no Tucker. Absolutely. Yeah, no PJ Tucker. Yeah. So, they really dug in there, and it was a pretty impressive win, especially on an emotional night for everyone. That was impressive. But enough about the Miami Heat. Jeez, way too much Miami Heat talk. Gosh.
Yeah, absolutely.
Raptors. Yes.
Yes.
Let's start here. Okay, OG Anunoby, right? So he missed yesterday's game, and I looked it up because I was curious, because every time he misses a game, it feels like, man, we miss OG Anunoby. But what's the record? And so he's missed 31 games this year, and they are 14-17 when he misses games, and 31-16 when he plays. This is the importance of OG Anunoby. And also, like we talked about earlier, I mean, Tyler Hero was going off, Victor Oladipo was going off. He is their best perimeter defender, right? And there's no like maybe kind of this, that, you know, he is their best perimeter defender. And if he has a healthy season, he would probably be in the conversation for defense player of the year because he's that good. He just can't freaking seem to be healthy. And I hope that this thigh contusion isn't a long-term thing. But once again, it was reiterated to us that he is irreplaceable on the Raptors roster. And he is so important to what they do on both ends. And I hope he's good to go. I just want to see like a healthy Raptors team this week at some point. Like no limping Fred, no, you know, Gary Trent Jr. being like, I can't really move my finger very well. Enough of that. Give me one game before the playoffs where I see the Raptors healthy and I'm good. Just one.
Yeah, and that's the good thing too, is that, you know, they have one of the easiest remaining schedules left But you know, I am with you on, I'll touch on the OG thing real quick before we get to that, but the OG thing, I mean, and you know, he's so important to everything they do. Like you said, he opens up the floor for them. And I mean, you know, he's a catch and shoot 3-and-D guy. And that's what I love about him is yeah, you're, to your point, it doesn't seem like, you know, when he's gone, it feels like he's gone for a while. And you know, it feels like the impact is like so heavy at times. Yeah. You think, okay, well, you know, him and Scotty are, I don't know, at times I've felt that, you know, because of their bodies that they are interchangeable, but that's really not the case at all. No, they are not. They're completely different players. And, you know, but OG is like, is such a good 3-and-D player. Like he is one of the premier 3-and-D players in the league, at least in my opinion. And you know, when he's gone, it hurts the Raptors as we saw last night. I, you know, that's just, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this week, looking at the schedule, you mentioned that they have one of the easiest ones remaining, but how easy is it? We talked about it in another podcast, but so the Hawks tomorrow, 76ers, Danny Green finally gets his ring.
Absolutely.
Attaboy. There we go. Anyone curious, I did speak to Danny Green around Christmas time. I spoke to him after he decided that he wasn't going to come to Toronto at that moment. Granted, the reason why, not to spoil it, but the reason why he didn't come back then is because he got COVID and everyone in his family got COVID. And some were saying, no, just get your ring, bro. You're not that guy. You're not Kyle. Like, no, man, you only win so many NBA rings, okay? So you should get it in the fashion that you want. You want your family beside you, just like Kyle did. You want fans there. You want to be celebrated in the proper way. And so I don't blame him, man. Like if he's that patient, and I learned during Green Room that he is a very patient man.
That's amazing.
Get your ring the proper way. And I'm happy that he's going to get this in the proper fashion. I think he's going to be doing some events tomorrow. So anyone looking for that, I think him and Harrison, they're doing something at the Rec Room in Toronto. So if you want to check it out, give her. But nice. I'm happy he's going to get his ring finally in front of, you know, the capacity fan base that he absolutely deserved. After that, they got a back-to-back against the 76ers, and they got the Rockets on Friday. And then the final game of the season is on the road against the Knicks. There could be implications for that one.
Still, you know, RJ Barrett, man, like he's averaging about 25, I think, over their last 10. Like he's not going to be an easy guy to shut, even though Julius Randle may not be in. I mean, RJ Barrett's going to be tough. And, you know, these teams that have nothing left, I mean, Atlanta's probably like, I mean, Atlanta and Philly, obviously, I'm more scared of Atlanta right now because Atlanta's playing for a spot in the play-in, and you know, sure, they're hungrier than probably any of the opponents the Raptors have left.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I think that they really want to prove themselves, and I think that they also want to you know, improve their positioning, because I don't know what the current layout of it is, but I don't think any team, you know, within that bottom four, I think it's Cleveland, Brooklyn, I think it's Atlanta and Charlotte, I don't think any, none of those teams want to face Brooklyn. Okay. None of those teams want to face Brooklyn, and Brooklyn
they
is
look vulnerable though. I'm just going to say they look vulnerable. They don't look like the team that we thought they were going to be. Granted, you know,
Ben I Simmons think
isn't there, but anyway, yes, go on. But no, obviously in a one game winner take all, do I want to face Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving? No,
absolutely. No. Absolutely not. Even though Atlanta beats Brooklyn, I think a couple nights ago, or maybe it was last night when KD had 55, but regardless, you know, I think Atlanta is going to be a tougher test for Toronto tomorrow night than Philly will be. I think the night after it is. That's just my opinion because, yeah, like I said, Atlanta, while they are, you know, lower in the standings, they have more to play for. Philly right now, they have home court advantage. They are in the playoffs. And, you know, I think that it will be a good test because based on where the standings are right now, I think the Raptors, are they the sixth seed now because they lost that and they don't have the tiebreaker with Chicago. I know that. So right now it looks like they'd be facing Philly. I think Philly's the third seed, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, I don't know why, but the Sixers, man, have just never really scared me. Even with Harden, even with Embiid, you know, those guys, especially on defense, I feel like they're very, very, it's easy to expose them. You know what I mean? On the defensive end. I think that's where the Raptors need to go, is like attack them, you know, obviously on offense. But yeah, in terms of their games that they have left, I think one is even against it's Atlanta, it's Philly, and it's New York, and then there's one more, you said, right?
Yeah, geez, I already forgot it. What's going on? Rockets. Sorry, yeah, Rockets. On Friday.
So
night.
Then,
yeah,
Houston is Houston. You know what I mean? Like, they're rebuilding right now as well. So I mean, yeah, I would say of the remaining four games that they have, Atlanta is the one I'd be probably the most cautious about.
Sure. And in both those games, it's one of the things in the NBA now, man, is that like we can say, oh, you know, Tankathon, this is a schedule, easiest remaining, yada, yada. It's really hard to win in the NBA. Like the Atlanta Hawks are no joke. They're, you know, what they're playing for is that they want home court in the play-in. And right now they don't have that because the Cavaliers do. Mm-hmm. They're a game and a half back. So you want, you know, especially in a winner take all, that kind of thing, you definitely want home court. And Trae Young, he had 41 and 11 against the Raptors last time they played. That was when they had a very hobbled Fred VanVleet. But hey, he is a very good player, and you don't want anything to do with him. Like, he is the pick and roll.
He can pull up from anywhere on the court. Yeah, like, man, he can pull up from anywhere on the court.
We talk about, you know, players who are incredible in the pick and roll. Trae Young is incredible in the pick and roll. And I think the Raptors, you know, they're going to have their hands pretty full in that matchup. So, two very competitive games, but I will say that I still feel like the Raptors end up being fifth because if you don't know, people, the Chicago Bulls, their schedule coming up, they got the Bucks on Tuesday, they got the Celtics on Wednesday, so that's a back-to-back, the Hornets on Friday, and then Sunday they close up the season on the road against the Timberwolves. That is not easy, man. So I know I did just say that you can lose on any given night, but that is a schedule where a lot of teams in the NBA, they would actually just go 0-4. And the Bulls, we've seen that they're vulnerable against some of the elite teams. I don't have the record in front of me, but we know they got one of the worst winning percentages against teams above 500. So they, they got some issues, and Zach LaVine is a little bit hobbled. It seems like DeMar's doing what he can, but I feel like, you know, over the course of this week, we're going to see the Raptors take over that fifth spot, and that's where they're going to end up. Mistakenly, we said earlier on that the Bucks or that the 76ers were third. They're actually fourth at the moment because the Bucks and the 76ers are tied at for third and fourth, but the Bucks have the tiebreaker. So at the moment, it seems like it's gonna be one of those teams for the Raptors. We'll have to see how that all shakes down, but they got to take care of business. And, you know, seeing an effort like yesterday, or they lose a game that's very winnable because that was a very competitive game. Your spirits were high, like you talked about earlier. Both teams were executing at a pretty high level. They were working very hard, but it was like these small things in the margins where they lost. And that's where Miami really does thrive. That's where Kyle Lowry really does thrive. That's where Tyler Hero, under the tutelage of Kyle Lowry, really does thrive. And so that's why, you know, that's where the kind of things went wrong for them. But I want to see them kind of, you know, figure out their, get their defensive intensity back to where it was and get their defensive IQ collectively back to where it was, because, you know, Trae Young in some ways, like, it's the best matchup for them because they need to show that they're still that team, especially coming off the last time they faced where Trae Young was a problem. I want to see them find that mojo again. And hopefully OG is back again. By contusion, they sat him out. They said he was limping around a little bit. So, I mean, who knows? Like, you know, NBA doctors are incredible these days. Hopefully he's back for the next game, but because they need him, especially against a person like Trae Young. But I gotta see that. I gotta see that intensity back, man. Like, this is playoff time. It's winning mode. I know Nick Nurse is back in winning mode because Thad Young is getting a lot more minutes. That's how you know, like you said earlier, that's how you know that Nick Nurse, like this is time to win. Right.
This is it.
I'm absolutely surprised that Malachi Flynn didn't play yesterday. I thought maybe he would
see a little bit.
But Armani Brooks got the 4 or 5 minutes that probably Malachi, you would think, would have got. It is what it is. But that's kind of where I'm at with this week.
Yeah, I think for the most part, you know, we're gonna see these last four games are so important. And you know, you already said that, but I think that, you know, the players that have the most to show, the most to prove, you know, and don't get me wrong, I don't mean this in a bad way at all. I think OG has, you know, a long way to come still, especially, you know, because of injuries, really.
Yeah.
His impact on the court is obvious. That's without question. I think the other person that has a lot to prove is Gary Trent Jr. because, you know, at times you've seen him without Fred VanVleet on the court where, you know, he is not able to get much going. Now in the playoffs, it's a completely different atmosphere than in the regular season. Everybody says that. And Gary Trent Jr., you know, he's been playing out of his mind. You know, there's one game he didn't start this year, and I think it was the first game of the season where Nurse elected to go with Goran Dragic. Good riddance. And now this is Gary Trent Jr.'s, you know, spot. The starting two is Gary Trent Jr.'s spot. And I mean, for most of the season, I've been saying this, you know, he's been outplaying his contract. Like, he's already showing that this is, you know, if he can, consistency for Gary Trent is like the number one key. And if he can continue this, I mean, he looks locked in. And, you know, you watch him in his post games and his pre games and, you know, in his media scrums, and he sounds and looks focused, and he's saying all the things that, you know, would give you the idea that this guy's locked in. I just think that when it comes to the playoffs, you know, he hasn't really performed on a stage that big yet. I think that's really going to show what his value is to this team. And I don't get me wrong. I think he's been great. He's been everything you could ask for. And in a way, his season accurately reflects that of the Raptors, where, you know, the expectations you had of them were surpassed. You know what I mean? But Gary Trent Jr., I think, has a lot to prove. I think I want to see a lot from him in these next four games. I do want to, you know, see him close out the season strong. And I want to see him start the playoffs strong. You know what I mean? I think him and OG, that's why I think they have the most to prove, because, you know, we know what we're going to get. Fred is Fred. He might not shoot the ball at the most effective percentage, but he's going to be all hands on deck when it comes to the defensive side of the ball. Yeah. He's always so active. Pascal Siakam, what can't that man do? I mean, honestly, he excels at a lot of things. He's really good at a lot of things. He may not be perfect in every department, but man, if you need somebody on the Raptors to go get you a triple double, or if you need to like identify anybody that's as important to the Raptors as anybody else, Pascal Siakam is my vote for most important player. Scotty, I'm, you know, at this point, anything that he does well in the playoffs, I think is just going to be icing on the cake. If he does underperform in the playoffs, obviously you look at that and say, well, you know, maybe it's just, you know, it's his first playoffs. You can't really, you know, think much of it. That's all you brush it up to. That's all you really chalk it up to is it's his first playoffs, and he's already been asked to do a lot as a rookie. He's leading all rookies in minutes. He's, I think, third or fourth on the Raptors in minutes. And, you know, all five Raptors starters are top 40 in the NBA in minutes played. So that in itself speaks to the volumes of just how much this team relies on its starters. So I think, you know, in terms of who I want to see the most from and who I think, you know, is really, really going to have to show the most, it's definitely going to be Gary Trent and OG.
Yeah. Gary shot 12 of 24 from three over his past three games. And the minutes are definitely there, like you said, 39 minutes, 43 minutes, 27 minutes in that Timberwolves game because it was a blowout. So, yeah, you think about players who could be X factors, and he's one of those guys that could be. Like, he could tilt the court, and if he gets in one of those five-minute stretches where he just, like, is hitting everything and he gets into that, like, en fuego mode where just, like, this guy is ridiculous. Like, how is he doing this? He can do that. He can tilt the game in a very short amount of time. He's one of those players. You can get hot really quick. And with Scotty, it's going to probably be all about emotions. Like, I think we kind of know the MO now that I think teams are going to be making the Raptors shoot threes. They want to see, like we've seen over the past little while, they want to see Thad Young and Chris Boucher and Precious Achiuwa. They want to see those guys hit shots because they're comfortable with, you know, if we can limit Pascal to 25. And yesterday he had 29, very meticulous with his offense. He was so calculated, man. Like, he's different.
He's unbelievable.
He is so good. Doesn't make mistakes. Yeah. He's so smart on the court. There were a couple of cases last night where, not to, you know, derail the conversation, but there were cases where I felt like Fred kind of missed some open shooters, and, like, you know, you want Gary Trent Jr. hitting open threes and shooting open threes, and he missed Gary a couple of times, but Pascal, he's not missing anyone, man. He's seeing everything on the court, and especially against a defense like Miami, where the paint, where there was no space in there, everyone was collapsing, and he has to, like, make those, like, few extra moves in the moment just to create that bit more separation for his three-point shooters. And he was doing that. Everything's on time. It's not late. It's not too early, because if it's too early, then you're kind of negating your advantage. Everything's on time, just like how Kyle Lowry would do it. Crazy. Mm-hmm. Anyways, yeah. It's going to be a tough one for Scotty. And I just want to see him control his emotions, make sure that he's staying composed in the moment, because I could see him getting a little bit emotional. There have been so many cases this year where, like, he's going crazy, man. He's jumping on Pascal, and Pascal's like, chill, youngin, relax. You know?
He gets really excited. But you know what, though? I'd love to see it more than anything. I mean, yeah, he gets too excited maybe sometimes, but at the same time, I've never seen a rookie be so excited to be wearing a Raptors uniform.
Yeah.
And maybe that's not specifically the case, but I mean, at the same time, you know, without question, I mean, he's going to be important to whatever the Raptors do.
100%. As Kyle said last night, he's the cornerstone of the franchise for years to come. He's a special talent. And Manny, man, you're a special talent too. What do you got coming up here?
So, if you guys go to check out the lineup, Raptors Republic, it's a YouTube series. I've been trying to do it for every game this season. I've done it for most. There's obviously been some times where I haven't been able to, but nonetheless, that's what I got going on. Also, I do have some freelance work that I do with Yahoo, so some articles. Go ahead and check that out. I think the last one I did was about why the Raptors could possibly spoil, you know, one of their meetings with a top seed because of how good they are on the road. Yeah. And since they're going to be a lower seed, they're going to be on the road more. There's that. And, you know, I'm just, you know, we're out here grinding and we're out here trying to make it and, you know, trying to earn my chops. So, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see where it goes. But, yeah, if you guys could give me a follow, that would be great. And yeah, man, thanks for having me, brother. I really appreciate it. And this has been awesome, man. I'm so happy that we were able to do this.
100%. What's your Twitter again? Let people know.
So go ahead, follow me. It's @_MannyRao. Like I said, the Twitter thing from before, the guy's had it since 2010. I can't get it. If any one of you know him, he has like one follower. Let him know that the real Manny Rao is asking for his name. Please.
If you are that one follower and you are happy to be listening to this podcast, please.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Reach out to him and tell him to deactivate his account so our boy here can get his account as he rightfully should. Love the hat. Love Manny.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, brother, for joining me. Much appreciated. Everyone, have yourself a great Monday, great Tuesday. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.